You're listening to Catholic Chicago Week in Review on Relevant Radio 950 AM and 930 AM. During the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago brings you conversation about the people, events, and issues that touch our lives. Welcome to Catholic Chicago Week in Review.
Good morning. I'm Jim Dish with the Archdiocese of Chicago's Radio TV office. And every Saturday morning here on Relevant Radio, we'll listen to highlights of our Catholic Chicago radio programs that air weekdays at 8 a.m. on WNDZ 750 a.m. We start out with a preview of what to expect when lawmakers get back to work in Springfield. Catholic Conference of Illinois Executive Director Bob Gilligan talked with Associated Press political writer John O'Connor about the upcoming spring session.
So without further ado, let's jump right into our topic here for the first 10-15 minutes of the program. We're joined by, hopefully we have him on the phone, John O'Connor from the Associated Press. John, you with us?
Yeah. Hi, Bob.
Hey, how are you? Good to hear you.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, thank you very much for coming on. And I have a note here that I want to get right to it because the producer, who we both know of the show, has instructed me that I have to mention that you are also, before we delve into the topics, you are Mr. Lincoln. You do the program down in Springfield, the one-man show about President Lincoln. Tell us a little bit about that before we jump into the topics here.
Yeah, well, I do a lot of community theater acting, and at one point, one of the directors of a local theater venue at New Salem, where Lincoln spent his early adult years, just north of Springfield, they have a theater out there, and there's a script called Mr. Lincoln, written by a former New York Times reporter who just died actually a couple of years ago. He was on the advisory board of the Lincoln Presidential Museum and Library in Springfield. Herbert Mitgang is his name. He wrote a script in 1981 called Mr. Lincoln. It's a one man show.
Wow.
And this theater director suggested that I play Lincoln, and because I'm only 6 foot one, we know that Lincoln was six foot four.
Yeah.
But I'm alone on stage, so there's no one, nobody can dispute how tall I am.
Tall enough, right? That's a tough game.
You know, we're talking about one of the things that the Lincoln Presidential Museum has, a very nice theater down here as part of its facility in Springfield, and the director has been wanting to produce Mr. Lincoln at the theater, but he was uncertain of the budget situation. So that everything comes back to the state budget.
Exactly. All roads lead back to, unfortunately, that black
hole.
Yeah, you know, people haven't been to Springfield.
Now that we've got that, we are gonna produce Mr. Lincoln, I believe, on April 14th.
That's an important date.
Fateful day for Mr. Lincoln.
Right.
That's the day he was assassinated.
Right.
So I tell people I'm not superstitious. I'm just a little stitious.
Hey, that's a Steve Carell joke, I think.
Exactly.
That's from The Office. I got you on that one. I use it too.
That's
too funny. My wife's going to laugh. That's, I say that all the time at home. She tells me, yeah, I got it. Oh, well, I got you. Hey, thanks for taking some time. So we'll go to Springfield, although maybe we should just talk about Lincoln. It'll be easier. So, you know, every year we kind of do this a little bit. They're not going to start. Legislature doesn't really get going until, well, it officially starts, what, January 23rd. Senate comes in after that, the 30th, and light session. Not much meeting going on before the Illinois primary, which I think is the 20th of March. But give us, you know, what do you, you know, we have a budget. I'm still kind of hungover from last year. It really ended.
And this year, probably more than any, because of the unique political situation and because of the unique budget situation.
Yeah.
We were without a budget for 2 years. We finally got a budget put together last year, but it's still kind of a tenuous situation. So in these off years and election years, there, you know, it's a 2 year General Assembly cycle,
right?
And these are the years that are traditionally limited to emergency measures. But this year, even more so than most years, there's going to be very little going on before March 20th because of the primary election. Not only do we have a very competitive Democratic primary for governor, but the governor himself, Bruce Rauner, who's a Republican, has a primary challenger in House of Representatives member Jeannie Ives from the western suburbs. And so he's going to be, you know, campaigning as well.
Right.
Then every house, then, you know, one third of the Senate and every House seat is up. And we have a lot of people retiring from the legislature. And so new people are coming in. They're competitive primaries. So they're politicians being politicians. They don't want to show their hand before they find out where the chips are going to fall, and that, and we'll find out more on March 20th. So as you say, they do have session days. They will be in session, and there will be legislation introduced, but very little of it going on before March.
Yeah, I think that you're right. It's a light schedule, and they're not going to push much before that. And even after that, I wonder what will happen. Just because we've had such challenges enacting a state budget, you know, even today, there's rumors out there that I'm sure they're being fed. There's talk of just a 6-month budget, get them through November, and then there's people saying, no, that's not the case. So, I mean, we're not off to a great start in terms of trying to enact a budget. But I would think for both parties, it would behoove them in terms of their reelection chances to be able to say to the public that at least we passed a budget for the year. But what do I know? I mean, it took them 2 years to get the last one.
Well, that's exactly it. The tendency would be, Bruce Rauner took office in 2015, and he ran into opposition from the Democrats who control the General Assembly, and we didn't have an annual budget in 2015 or in 2016, or 2017 was one that they were trying to, you know, and that was the longest any state has gone in decades, at least since the Great Depression, without an annual budget plan. So there's a lot of chaos, and so the tendency would be, okay, in July of last year, the Democrats put together a coalition with some renegade Republicans, and they voted to override Governor Rauner's vetoes of a budget and a tax increase, an income tax increase, and we had finally had an annual budget. So you think, okay, well, the crisis is over. We've got money coming in, and, you know, we've got a lot of bills to pay. But then, as you say, the January comes around, and the General Assembly comes back in. And you say, oh, wait a minute, we have to pass another budget this year, and it being such a unique political year, that's a big question. Will any kind, you know, one could argue that the Democrats in the legislature, if they approve any kind of budget, that's kind of a victory for Bruce Rauner, you know. They may want to, the governor. The governor kind of wears the collar, wears the jacket for the budget situation.
Right.
And if he doesn't have one, it's tough to run for reelection when you have no budget. So yeah, lots of questions. And as you suggested, even after the primary, there might not be a lot of substantive legislation going through because of all the questions about the budget situation.
Fresh in our mind is just continuing over from last year. It's amazing. We just never seem to end these things. But one of the big issues was the equitable funding formula that the legislature passed. And just this past Monday, we were a little surprised when the governor announced his amendatory veto that would change the recognition process for the scholarship tax credit program that we were involved with. And I would imagine we haven't received any confirmation yet, but I know the leadership in both chambers is still discussing what action to take on that. So we're going to get right out of the chute. We're probably going to get a little cranky before we even had time to sort of say, how was your Christmas and how was your New Year's? I don't know. When those sort of things happen, we'll see what the ramifications of them are.
And that the governor will say, there are there are several dozen schools that won't benefit from this historic funding formula. And it's not a big deal. There's plenty of time for the legislature to fix it and help to move the funding formula along, which includes the tax credit for non-public schools.
Right.
And the Democrats in the legislature say, no, you've just stopped the whole thing, and you've right. thrown another wrench in things. So, I frankly don't know the answer there either.
Sure.
I'm waiting for all the other shoes to drop.
Yep, there are many. I think you've kind of answered this. We got about 2 minutes to go, but I think there's a lot of speculation and there's concerns in some of the folks that I talk to about the legislature's move towards things like legalization of marijuana and a move towards a progressive income tax and that kind of thing. I don't know if we're ready. I know there's talk of it, and I think Pritzker was going to come out and say something today. I don't know if he did or not. We're taping this program, so it's hard to tell. But I wonder if the game plan from the proponents of those sort of things are to kind of kick those things around this year, throw them out there, see where they're at, and then wait for the gubernatorial election and however those things go, try again next year. That's kind of what I'm thinking, but I'm just curious to see if you have any insights.
I would agree with that, particularly on the income tax issue. No one wants to stick their necks out on an income tax until we have a new governor. And, you know, each of the Democrats has proposed a constitutional amendment to change the tax structure. Bob Diber from the Illinois suburbs of St. Louis, the only downstate candidate, has actually come out with a structure. The others haven't been too specific on numbers. On marijuana, I think it's something that's inevitable. California has now made it legalized, but Illinois is kind of slow on moving on those things. We have some progressive Democrats, liberal Democrats in the legislature pushing that idea, but I think you're right. I think they're going to continue to push it this year, and it's going to take a new governor before people want to see what that new governor does and says.
That was Associated Press political writer John O'Connor being interviewed by Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference of Illinois. Bob, of course, one of the busiest guys in Springfield, representing the interests of the Catholic Church. Also doing a great job is Deacon John Cook, who hosts our Black Catholic Initiative radio program. He talked with a couple of people who are deeply involved in launching a mental health center on Chicago's West Side.
I am so excited this morning to be interviewing my deacon brother, Greg Schumpert, as well as Miss Jackie Ingram. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
And how are you all doing this morning?
Great.
Good. It's good to see you both. And Greg, it's been, I realize now, about 2 years since we last talked on the radio. Can you believe that?
Wow.
Yeah. Time really flies, doesn't it?
Especially when you're having fun, Deacon.
Well, I have a lot of fun. In fact, the audience should know by now, if you've been listening to me for a while, that I'm a huge sports fan. You know, I'm a big Cub fan. But now I am really excited about these Chicago Bulls. God, they're a good young team, and I can't wait to see what happens with Nico Meritit, because I think that they can possibly pick up a really good draft pick or a really good player if they trade him. But we know this isn't a sports show. I'm just speaking my mind. But, Greg, you know, last time that we talked about a number of things because you wear a lot of hats. We talked about your work over there at St. Agatha's. We talked about your work with the Community Renewal Society. And we also talked about the mental health centers that you had, I think, just begun to work on. And you were part of a much larger organization. And as a community, you all were developing and have been developing this mental health center for the West Side.
Yeah, we have Deacon Cook. And currently, this is our second mental health center that we're actually starting to develop, finishing developing. And we're in the stages where we're actually funded. And what we're doing is we're putting together the board of directors, commissioners from the governor's office and the mayor's office, putting them together in order to put the programs into a center. So we're walking those fine lines. And Miss Ingram came with me this morning, one of my partners in crime and developing that neighborhood part of what we're doing.
So, Jackie, what part do you play then in this effort?
Well, Deacon, I want to say good morning and thank you for having us. And basically my part is to educate, so that means I knock on doors with our neighbors. I facilitate meetings and talk with my neighbors on why we need to create an expanded mental health service program. I'm that community organizer for our neighbors.
Okay, and so how much time do you devote to doing that? Because that sounds like a lot of work.
Well, you know what? It sounds like a lot of work, but it really isn't. What we do is we divide and conquer. We have everybody in East and West Garfield Park helping, North Lawndale, and the Near West Side. Those are our targeted areas that we are working with right now. So everybody has a little group, and we meet once a month and strategize what we need, what we should do, and where we are right now.
So you're meeting where the people meet, I guess, at churches.
Exactly.
and other facilities where you've got large groups of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you're meeting with other community members as well, who are movers and shakers and who can disseminate that information.
Exactly. We're with what they call community action teams.
Okay.
And we all get together and we talk about and strategize. And the Coalition to Save Our Mental Health Centers started, talking to Father Larry at St. Agatha and got us involved with that. And it has been a heaven sent ever since.
You know, like we talked about when you all first came in, I mean, what a wonderful thing for people of goodwill,
mm-hmm,
to be able to take control of a situation that seems like you can't do anything about it. But in this case, you can.
Exactly.
I mean, how many of us who are listening, driving or either walking, and you see someone who is apparently homeless, and sometimes you see people talking to themselves. I mean, you do see that a lot in the area where I'm at.
Exactly.
And it's a scary thing. Not that you're frightened by them per se, but you're scared for them.
Right.
You know, and who knew that you could really do something about this, Greg, as you've been working on now for some time? You say this is the second such effort.
This is our second such effort. Our first effort is on 41st and Kedzie. We call it the Kedzie Center. And what we've done is we put together a plan of how to integrate into communities free mental health facility to encompass those things that you talk about, Deacon. We talk about complete mental health. And when we think about mental health in our particular neighborhoods, people often think that when you talk about mental health that you have something's wrong with your thinking, something's wrong with your behavior. And that's not necessarily true most often. Most often what we try to do is we try to help seniors in our communities do certain groups. And what our plan is in the near future when we open our center is to have those professionals. So the professionals I speak about are psychologists and psychiatrists to go from that center to meet people where they are. So to go to the seniors' place, to go to the schools in our areas, to go to the community center and put on services that can be available to people in our communities.
So this sounds as though to me that it's a bigger effort. It's more than just a community health center. This is a more all-encompassing effort to take care of additional needs that people might have.
Correct.
So how many health centers have we lost in Chicago? How many do we have now? And what's the plan for expansion?
Deacon?
Well, we started out with 17 in the city of Chicago, and presently we are at 5. So those other 12 centers.
We're at 5 mental health centers?
Yes.
They've closed down, did I hear, 12?
Yes. So intentional, Deacon, what we want to do is we want to regain the trust of our brothers and sisters in different communities to, you know, open and sponsor their own.
Thanks, as always, to Deacon John. And we invite you to stick around to hear how you can get involved with Catholic Charities in this new year. Back in a moment.
The Word Made Clear is exactly what its name implies. It's an easy-to-understand explanation of the Word of God, the Gospel. Hello. I'm Father James McElhone, Director of Biblical Formation for the Archdiocese of Chicago. I'd like to invite you to take our free online Bible study program by going to thewordmadeclear.org. Our website offers an audio-based guide to the Gospels of Mark, Matthew, Luke, and John. Listen to my lectures and follow along with the handouts provided. There are even discussion guides. You can also explore the biblical roots of the Mass. And there are links to a wide variety of biblical sources that will benefit both teachers and students of the Sacred Scriptures. Just go to wordmadeclear.org to experience our free online Bible study program. Again, it's free at wordmadeclear.org. It's the Word of God. Enjoy.
We invite you to watch Catholic Chicago this weekend, featuring a conversation with Cardinal Blaise Cupich and video highlights from across the Archdiocese. Here's host Todd Williamson.
During the next half hour, we'll talk with Cardinal Blaise Cupich about his recent trip to hurricane-devastated Puerto Rico. We'll tell you about the new home for local Catholic radio in the Chicago area, and we'll review a few of the major events of 2017, from the Walk for Peace to Re-Encounter to the solar eclipse.
Watch Catholic Chicago Friday at 7 p.m. on Chicago Loop Cable, Channel 25, and Sunday afternoon at 3 on the Comcast Network, Channel 100.
Welcome back to Catholic Chicago Week in Review here on Relevant Radio, 950 AM and 930 AM. Let's kick off this segment with Catholic Charities President and CEO, Monsignor Michael Boland. He had a conversation with two staff members about the value of volunteers who give their time and talent to Catholic Charities.
We're having a conversation this morning about the great need for a chance for people who might be thinking about wanting to volunteer, getting to either practice some skills or share skills that we might have, and really realize that there's a sense of empathy that we have. Pope Francis always refers to the image of encounter, and it isn't just handing something to somebody, but actually maybe having a conversation and understanding a little bit more deeper about that person, and that person understanding a little bit more about you. And as those encounter, we realize that they are really like Christ moments for all of us. And Marie, I know we were talking a little bit about earlier about the New Year's resolutions people might make, or sometimes they would like to make a deeper commitment to their faith or to their church. And if someone's never volunteered before, what would you recommend?
That's a great question, and I think one of the spaces that it's easiest to enter into volunteer is with our suppers. You had mentioned before the break about our suppers, which happen throughout Cook and Lake County. And these are very wonderful opportunities to engage with the work of Catholic Charities at the low threshold. So, for instance, we have a supper every Tuesday night that volunteers can come to. Come and serve a meal to the homeless, get to meet some of the guests who are coming to us because they're hungry and because they're in need of some companionship. So that's a great way to get involved. And then from there, really deepen into, as you had mentioned, what your passion is. And I think, you know, sometimes there can be a little bit of fear about how do I engage with people that are different from me? How do I start doing something because we're so huge? What is it that I really want to be doing with Catholic Charities? And so I would really recommend those suppers and our food pantries specifically as a way to enter into working with us. And then from there, really developing what our passions, what your passions are.
Yeah. I think many people don't realize, you know, we have 154 locations. So people could think about places that are close to their home or they might be able to do them, like with the junior board, might be able to do it with some friends of theirs. So the idea is that there's a lot of possibilities if people think about it, that they could do things. I know over this different times of the dinners, we have, you know, parents there with their children. Mm-hmm. It was very evident on Thanksgiving and Christmas. Yeah. But all throughout the year, we see people who are there who are, you know, bringing their families. And actually, there's probably no better way to teach about our faith and about how we live our faith more than just by just simply asking someone to realize that, you know, young kids are coming down, like on Christmas Day or on Thanksgiving, before they have their celebrations with their families, mm-hmm. They stop in and spend an hour, hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, really helping, serving people. And the idea about I think our gratitude and our mm-hmm. our blessings. And on Christmas Day, we had many. It was wonderful to see many people from the Jewish faith that were there, volunteering. And there were five families that came, and they came out and served. There was the other young adults in the Jewish faith that came to Chicago. There's about 600 of them from around the country, and 10 of them came with their leader to volunteer for the day, and they did an extraordinary. And it was just so I think we can meet and mix with all these various people who are all trying to make the world a better place, and I think that's what we're trying to do, and to make the humanity side for our clients and for the families we have the privilege to serve, to show the expression, the richness mm-hmm. of all the many things we do, and that there are so many places they can go to and do to be a part of those things. And so it's really very important for us to think about, to mentor, to teach young people about the importance of giving back and the mm-hmm. importance of serving. And actually, you know, think the greatest thing in life is when we can actually feel like we've made a difference in the life of an individual, a person, or a family member who might be just disenfranchised mm-hmm. or struggling, and we realize, boy, when you make that connection or difference, it really makes, you know, the world, our society, not only a much better place, but it does bring us a great center for peace mm-hmm. in our own self, and about so much about our faith that we realize when we talk about doing these things, it isn't, you know, something terrible or an albatross. It's something kind of simple, and we can do that, and I think it's really a great thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe, Noreen, we were talking a little about the junior board. I know that in many parishes, there's always the encouragement of encouraging young adults to be more active and alive, present in their churches. Maybe we could talk about how people, if somebody wants to join the junior board, what would they do?
So if you'd like to join the junior board, and we'd love to have you, all are welcome, all backgrounds and all faiths. And I think, as you mentioned, it's a great place to meet others who feel the same way about service and giving back. You can go to the Catholic Charities website and get an application for the junior board. The Catholic Charities website is www.catholiccharities.net. Or you can call me. I know it's not of our generation to make phone calls, but I love phone calls, so call me anytime, 312-655-7932, and I'd be more than happy to talk to you more about the junior board and how to join.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is that with the junior board, it is just, you know, there's three major meetings a year, right, mm-hmm. that people get a chance to come to. So it's really done through volunteer activities or social activities mm-hmm. or faith activities. So it's really, one is not doing something it's a burdensome. It's really meant to help facilitate communication and mm-hmm. make sure that if somebody does want to volunteer, that they can volunteer according to their time schedule and their time frame. And we all know how precious time is, and yet there's a lot of young people who are really very interested, a lot of people who are just very interested in trying to make a difference. And when they realize that it's not a real complicated thing for them to do, I think they're much more inclined to want to be able to do that. You know, mm-hmm. and so I think the junior board, it does allow that, our volunteer opportunities. We can see that there are people that can, you know, volunteer. And sometimes they volunteer and say, you know, they volunteer at something and say, well, this is not something I really would like or whatever. There's always a myriad of other ways and times, ways people can get involved.
Always good to hear from Monsignor Boland. Here's a reminder that to find out more about the wonderful work being done every day by Catholic Charities, or to make a donation, go to catholiccharities.net. Stick around. In a moment, we'll hear from our friends in the Office for Lifelong Formation.
The hurricanes of 2017 dealt a devastating blow to poor communities across the U.S. People there reached out to the church for help and found it. Faith communities rallied to provide assistance to those in need, and we helped too. We are Catholic Extension. We're helping rebuild churches and schools, and we're supporting communities in areas destroyed by the hurricanes. Funds are desperately needed. To donate, go to catholicextension.org/hurricane relief or call 888-473-2484.
The Cemetery Ministry is a core ministry of our Catholic faith tied to the corporal works of mercy. It's comforting to know that our Catholic cemeteries are caring for the remains of our loved ones awaiting the resurrection. There are 44 Archdiocese of Chicago Catholic cemeteries willing to help you in your time of loss. Call 708-449-6100 or visit catholiccemeterieschicago.org. Catholic Cemeteries, serving the Catholic community since 1837.
Chicago Catholic school families are receiving a present this Christmas season in the form of tax credit scholarships. Hi, I'm Dr. Jim Rigg, Superintendent of Catholic Schools for the Archdiocese of Chicago. The exciting news is that individuals and corporations that donate to tax credit scholarships will receive a 75% state tax credit while providing scholarship aid for students in need. Individual and corporate donors can reserve tax credits beginning January 2nd, but you need to take steps right now. Go to archchicago.org/TCS to guide you through the process. That site also shows you how to apply to receive scholarship money. You can also call 312-534-2617. Keep in mind, individuals can designate their donations to Archdiocese of Chicago Catholic Schools. The website, once again, archchicago.org/TCS or call 312-534-2617. Thank you for helping families in our Catholic schools.
You're listening to Catholic Chicago Week in Review on Relevant Radio 950 AM and 930 AM. Every Saturday from 9 to 10 AM, the Archdiocese of Chicago presents programming about the people, events, and issues that touch our lives. Thanks for letting us be part of your morning. Now again, Catholic Chicago Week in Review.
Welcome back to Catholic Chicago Week in Review. I'm Jim Dish, Director of the Archdiocese of Chicago's Radio TV Office. Every Saturday morning here on Relevant Radio 950 and 930 AM, we'll listen to highlights of our Catholic Chicago radio programs that air throughout the week. And we begin this segment with news from our Office for Lifelong Formation. Here's Juan Pablo Padilla, who interviewed John Roberto of the Vibrant Faith Leadership Team.
We've been talking about lifelong formation and moving and seeing how we can move from a traditional model of just whatever it is that comes to mind when you think of Sunday school into something that's much more lifelong that actually takes us through our entire life. We were talking about the 10-decade formation process, and that's it really starts when we're children, but it can go on until, you know, whenever God calls us to his home. And right before the break, I was asking John a very important question about, you know, if I'm a DRE or a CRE or just someone who's interested in this, how can I start? I mean, there has to be a starting point. I mean, clearly, I don't think I want to start with the children for sure, but I also want to start with my senior citizens. So, John, what advice would you give us in terms of starting something that's going to be lifelong?
So let's think about these three environments: intergenerational, family, and then peer or age group. What we want to do is become more intentional about the intergenerational relationships and experiences everybody has at church. So I often talk about a parish as implicitly intergenerational. What I mean is there's all kinds of intergenerational things that happen on Sunday morning, events during the year that are intergenerational, all the generations come to. So that those are kind of things that happen, but we're not intentional about fostering intergenerational relationships or experiences through those events. So if you think about intergenerational and bringing the generations together, think of it as kind of a continuum. Small steps that lead to becoming a much more intentional and having a much more integrated plan for bringing the generations together. So if you just start with very small steps, I'll give you a couple of examples. The Advent Christmas season and the Lent Easter season are great opportunities to bring the generations together in preparation for and celebration of the seasons of the year. So Lent is coming, so we'll use Lent as an example. I've worked with lots of churches that have done like an intergenerational Lenten festival or festivals, depending on the number of people, in which the generations come together for a corporate experience, prayer, learning, both together and in age groups, creating something for their Lenten experience, maybe creating a Lenten calendar together, et cetera, et cetera. But they get a chance to be in the same room at the same time, doing something intentional, sharing faith stories, remembering what Lent is about, creating something, talking to each other, teaching each other, and for an hour and a half, 2 hours of praying and learning and celebrating and maybe eating a meal, a simple meal, think about the possibilities of the generations coming together. A parish is doing, you know, Lenten simple meals on Friday, maybe followed by the Stations of the Cross. This can be an intergenerational experience if we just bring some intentionality to it. So the ways in which we help people sit at tables, the way we have a focusing question for them, the way in which we have a common prayer, the way in which they get a chance to share some faith stories about this Sunday in Lent, the ways in which we do Stations of the Cross where we might highlight one generation at the stations, leading, praying, working with the whole congregation as experiences the Stations of the Cross, and every week lifting up a different generation. So it's bringing this intentional focus to church life to say fostering intergenerational relationships is really, really important for the faith growth of everybody, not just the kids and the teenagers. But children and teens need intergenerational experiences, but so do the older generations to be connected. Simple things. A lot of churches do an experience which I call App Sunday, APP, and essentially it's an experience that you do right after Christmas because, you know, the older generations, grandparent generation gets a lot of technology at Christmas time, maybe a new phone, maybe a tablet, that kind of thing. The people who are best able to mentor them and teach them are basically middle school and high school kids. So I've watched churches take a Sunday worship experience to bring the generation together to say, bring your device to church. We've got experts in our midst who are going to help you use and download these apps and learn how to use this. And so the younger mentoring the older. Well, what happens in that relationship is, of course, stories are going to be shared. People are going to learn from each other. Every older member of the community is now going to have someone they can contact if they get stuck. But now these teenagers, middle school and high school, have met older members of the community and started building a relationship. It's just bringing an intentionality to what we do. If you see this as a continuum, these intergenerational relationships and experiences can grow into regular intergenerational learning experiences, intergenerational service and mission trips. One of the fastest growing programs that an organization called Road Scholar, which used to be Elder Hostel, which does week-long programs for older adults, 60 plus. Their fastest growing program is grandparents with their grandchildren, 10 and over, doing these week-long trips around the world, both in the States and around the world. That's their fastest-growing program. So thinking about these intergenerational relationships, programming, I work with camp directors and camp programs. I talk a lot about doing an intergenerational camp. Have grandparents bring their grandchildren. You got kind of baked-in adult presence. You got these relationships. And grandparents have the money to bring their kids to camp, you know, unlike moms and dads who have no money and time. And not only you're fostering the within-the-family intergenerational relationship, but you're also fostering intergenerationships across the whole camp program. Those are the things we need to be much more attentive to. Taking our children or teen program and splicing into it intergenerational events, experiences, and programs where the children get in touch with other generations as part of their 24, 30 weeks a year, or as part of their confirmation program, as part of their first Eucharist program. I think these are essential because those relationship building paves a way to think about faith formation across the whole lifespan.
Thanks to Pablo and John for their insights. If you want to hear the full unedited radio programs featured this morning, go to archchicago.org and click on Radio TV. Now let's switch gears and hear from the co-hosts of Built on the Rock, Father Brito Birchmans and Deacon Bob Bolger. Their topic, as always, relationships.
And we're delighted to be with you in the car or in your home, wherever you are.
Yes.
And enjoying doing this radio show that really talks to people and relationships and families.
Exactly.
The Catholic faith is a domestic church, isn't it? It's
Absolutely.
Rooted in the families.
And we just celebrated the Feast of the Holy Family yes. just a few days ago. And we are focusing on helping our men and women build their relationships on Jesus Christ.
The rock that is Jesus, building that on the rock and not on the sands, as we read in Matthew's Gospels.
So. Exactly. And it has been a wonderful run for us for the last couple of years. And as we start the new year, you know, we all filled with so much hope.
Yes,
we look forward to the new year. And, of course, we always make resolutions.
Well, the lines are a lot longer Weight Watchers these days, I think. People making the resolution to lose weight after all of the holiday food and parties and everything.
I know.
But maybe it's also good to make spiritual resolutions as well and try to use this time to get closer to the Lord.
Exactly.
Because time goes by so quickly.
And I was just thinking about that the other day, you know. How much time we spend on taking care of our bodies.
Yeah, that's true.
Feeding it, grooming it, sleeping, resting, refreshing, exercising. It's all about the body.
Yeah, and keeping the body healthy. And sometimes we make our attention to our bodies, we make that God rather than to God. You know?
Yeah, of course, taking care of the body is important because it is the temple of the Holy Spirit. And as they say, mens sana in corpore sano, that is, a healthy mind in a healthy body.
Yes.
So it is important to take care of the body, but I don't think we should neglect taking care of our spirit.
Right, exactly. We don't want to get into the area of narcissism or anything like that. It's just being healthy so that we can serve the Lord is
exactly.
That's the good resolution.
And of course, one of the ways of focusing on the spirit is to focus on our relationships.
Yes, on our families.
Exactly.
And it reminds me that one of our last sessions, we started talking about a wonderful book. Actually, it's a series of books by a husband and wife, and how they talk about how husbands and wives should relate in order to strengthen their marriage, to strengthen their relationship with each other. One of the volumes is called For Women Only. One of the volumes is called For Men Only. And we were discussing For Men Only, and we only scratched the surface, I think, in our last discussion. And we give recognition to Shanti and Jeff Feldhan, who wrote the series of books. And in particular, the one written For Men Only, I thought, was very, very practical. And maybe we want to continue that discussion today.
Yes.
And invite the women in our audience to listen to what we have to say. If it resonates with you, then have your husband go to the archives and listen to the show. And for our men that are out there listening, what we're about to talk about has been affirmed and endorsed by women, a lot of women that have gone through this series.
Exactly. So. And these books were written as a result of survey research that these two people did.
Yes.
And so it is based on real facts and not, you know, made up by somebody sitting in a lab or sitting in a room in a university.
Right.
But this was really the conclusions that were brought out of research. So they can believe them.
Well, and I did my own field research at my own home, and I've discussed a number of these areas. None of these topics I've talked with my wife, Kathy, and she said, oh, yeah, that's absolutely correct. Absolutely correct.
She exactly. Said, and it is so funny that, you know, men and women are so different.
Yes.
That already 30 years ago, John Gray was very resourceful. He wrote a series of books, and all the books, the title started with Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus.
Yes, yes.
And I think these people are giving us, you know, great insights into how we are different.
Well, somebody once said that for a man and woman to live together in married life happily and successfully is the one miracle that the Vatican consistently overlooks. And I think that's true because men and women are so different. Right. And yet we're drawn to each other, and really we're made for each other. And in the marriage feast and the sacrament of matrimony, the two do become one flesh.
Exactly.
But staying together as one flesh is very hard.
So let's maybe we start talking about what men can understand about women according to this book. We have touched on, I think, emotions, and I think also we talked about decoding, right?
Yes, and we've talked about the fact that one of the concepts of this book for married couples to understand, particularly husbands, is that the deal is never closed. That's one of the things that this couple talks about. And that there's never permanent closure. Men always have to remind their wives that they are the center of their lives, that their wives are the most important thing to them, that their wives are beautiful. We can never say that enough. Women need to hear that.
I know. I mean, I remember, you know, a joke that I've said in church. You remember that game we used to have, the newlyweds game?
The newlywed game, yes.
Where you know, you separate the bride and the groom and ask them the same question to see if they give the same answer.
Right, yes.
So apparently they were playing this game out in New Jersey in a Catholic, Italian Catholic parish.
Oh, my.
And they separated the husband and wife, and they asked, of course, first the wife, they said, when was the last time your husband said to you, I love you? She said, 45 years ago when we got married. And they said, what? You never said it again? I said, no. And they said, that's kind of strange. Then they brought the man over, and they asked the man, when was the last time you said to your wife, I love you? He said, 45 years ago when we got married.
Gosh.
Yeah. And they said, you never said it again? He said, no. How come? He said, very simple. On the day of our wedding, I looked at my wife with all the love in my heart, and I said, darling, I love you with all my heart, but if anything changes, I will let you know. I mean, see, that doesn't work.
That doesn't work for the woman.
Exactly.
She needs to hear and to see that the husband loves her, and it's not just by words, it's by actions as well.
Exactly. And I think at least one of the things I share with my couples that I prepare for marriage is that the most important thing that a woman wants from the man is that she feels that she is absolutely number one in his life.
That sense of emotional security.
Exactly.
And I think the research showed that women will forego financial security in favor of that emotional security. They'd rather have the husband be with them than necessarily out making millions of dollars.
Exactly. So men think that, you know, if I work hard, make more money, she'll be happy.
Right.
But she says, I may even have less money as long as you make me feel emotionally secure.
You are listening to Father Brito and Deacon Bob of St. Paul of the Cross Parish in Park Ridge. It's also good to hear from our mission office, and we have a pastoral associate who has a great story, but you need to stick around. We'll be back after a short break.
Pope Francis calls us to draw near to the poor, to encounter them, to meet their gaze, to embrace them. The Catholic Campaign for Human Development lives out this message of solidarity by addressing root causes of poverty. CCHD accompanies low-income communities as they confront the unjust structures that affect them. Support the work of CCHD by donating during the annual collection on November 18th and 19th. Visit cchdchicago.org to learn more and to contribute online.
Pope Francis calls us to dream big and challenge one another to proclaim the good news. To help answer that challenge, you're invited to participate in the 2018 Chicago Faith Congress, Reignite the Journey. This one-day event, tailored for all who answer the call of the catechist, takes place Saturday, February 10th at Loyola University's Lakeshore campus. Go to pvm.artschicago.org to learn more about the Chicago Faith Congress. That's pvm.artschicago.org. Welcome back to our final segment of Catholic Chicago Week in Review. You've been listening to highlights from our great lineup of programs from the Archdiocese of Chicago, programs that can be heard Monday through Friday from 8 to 9 in the morning on 7:50 a.m. Wrapping things up for this Saturday is Megan Mio, director of our mission office, who visited with David Hyman, a pastoral associate at St. Andrew Parish in Chicago.
You've served as a contact for one of our missionaries, a priest, missionary priest in the Diocese of Butare, Rwanda,
mm-hmm.
Father Dennis Kienge.
Kienge.
Kienge. Okay. And for the mission office and our summer mission appeal, parishes may be familiar with this, you have a missionary who visits and makes a request, shares a reflection at the Sunday liturgies or Saturday liturgy, and a second collection is taken up for their missionary cause, their projects that they make an appeal to the community for. But for the mission office, we need to have what we call U.S. contacts for each missionary group, especially those who are international, traveling to make the appeal. Somebody in the U.S. who can relay information, keep track of scheduling, help with the transfer of money, things like that. So you have served as a U.S. contact in the past and with this particular diocese in Rwanda. So be curious, how did you first meet?
Sure. So as a youth minister, there was a program started with Catholic Relief Services called Call to Witness, where they take a delegation of youth ministers from across the United States and bring them to see some of the services that are provided by Catholic Relief Services in many of the different countries that it works. So it was 2003, and I had the opportunity to be on the Call to Witness program with Catholic Relief Services. There were six of us, and they sent us as a delegation to be in relationship with the church in Rwanda. Mm-hmm. But we got split up in teams, and my partner and I got chosen to be in the Diocese of Butare. And they said, well, we have one priest who speaks English, mm-hmm. so why don't we send you to him in his remote village parish. Mm-hmm. And they don't do this anymore. I've talked to them. But they literally just dropped us off there and came back 2 days later and said, how was it?
How'd it go?
And we said it was absolutely tremendous, transformative, life-changing. Mm-hmm. Father Dennis was my host, and he brought me to see the many reconciliation efforts that Catholic Relief Service was doing out in the Diocese of Butare. The reconciliation efforts were very important and still are important because of the genocide that happened in Rwanda. Mm-hmm. And the church played a major impact, and Catholic Relief Services played a major impact in trying to bring people back together and find truth and reconciliation. We got to see reclamation projects for land that had been lost and how Catholic Relief Services was helping to develop those areas so there could be sustainable agriculture. Mm-hmm. We got to visit mm-hmm. the church and the people. And in the midst of that, a deep friendship emerged between Father Dennis and I. And we knew that it could not be a one-way street. It could not be something where hey, occasionally I'd come and I'd write a check, or I'd ask my friends, hey, I know this project in Rwanda, let's help it out. It had to be something where there was mutuality involved, where the friendship that we had was recognizing that in Rwanda there was need, and there is need. There's need throughout the world for development, and that's one of the great things that we have a privilege as Catholics in participating in our mission efforts. Mm-hmm. But it's not just about those individuals there have a need and we're going to supply it. We have a need too. Mm-hmm. And that need is the friendship, the ability to see the universality of the church, to live in a relationship of solidarity. And for now 15 years, Father Dennis and I have had the privilege of trying to make that relationship work. And shortly after my stay there, I became his U.S. contact, and I help apply for other opportunities for him to speak at other dioceses across the United States. In the 15 years, everybody wants to monetize things or put a number on what's the effectiveness. Well, together we've been able to raise around $250,000 over 15 years for efforts in Rwanda, and that's great. But more important is the relationship. Mm-hmm. Both are important. The direct work that we do and the vibrancy that a relationship with someone in a developing country, a friend I have who is serving the church in mission lands, can bring to the people of God here in the United States as well.
Yeah, when it comes to the Summer Mission Cooperative, of course, it's a collection, and a lot of parishes think about it that way. But, you know, in the work that I've done in the mission office, I have found that it's the message mm-hmm. that honestly makes this collection work. I mean, the fact that people are generous is wonderful, but it's hearing the personal witness that our missionaries provide to their own work or their own relationships. I mean, because there are some folks who are based here in the U.S., but they've
right.
had experience or they have relationships back in their missionary diocese that touches people's hearts. And I think it opens our eyes in many ways. For a lot of Americans, we have no idea what it's
right.
like
right.
in other parts of the world. And not just to say how you know, challenging it might be to be living in a developing nation in a war-torn area or a place that's rebuilding. But to think about what evangelization means in these different contexts, because each context is different. Each context has its challenges and its gifts, and each culture brings different things to the gospel, and the gospel brings different things to that. So just to open the eyes of people to hear that message is really important for the summer co-op, and I think for bringing your friend to the U.S., certainly the raising of funds is key, but it's the sharing of that message.
Absolutely.
And for people coming from Rwanda, we don't have a lot of visitors from Rwanda because
we don't. And part of the invitation from Jesus Christ is that the church should go out throughout the world, because the intention of Christ's saving act was for all of creation to be brought into oneness with Him. And we're the mystical body of Christ, and the church is alive throughout the world, and yet we mm-hmm. we forget. I sometimes use the analogy of it's like atrophy of an arm that's just coming back to life. You know, you let your arm go to sleep or your leg go to sleep, and mm-hmm. you know you stand up and all of a sudden your leg starts working again, and you feel like, oh, it stings a little bit because you didn't know that member of your body had fallen asleep, that had kind of like the blood cut off a little bit. Mm-hmm. And when we animate ourselves to see and recognize and learn about and form relationship with others throughout the world who are part of the body of Christ, there's really a beautiful awakening that happens there. And it can sting a little bit at times because, you know, it's like an arm coming back to life. But we're all the mystical body of Christ, and we're called to live that out fully, not just, you know, who I am in my parish in the United States, but who I am in my parish in the United States, in the world, and the world being the place where Christ has chosen to bring His act of salvation to us all.
So clearly you've reflected on this over the years, just as 15 years. But just out of curiosity, as you were describing your arrival and what you saw when you first were on the ground and how they kind of left you there and sort of said, figure this out, was that your first experience of traveling and really, you know, developing relationships with folks outside the U.S. and especially in the developing world in Africa?
It was my first experience of traveling to a developing country. I had traveled a little bit through Europe and England and so forth, but I was struck by the immense beauty, first of all, and everything was different but familiar. And that's something I find a lot when traveling, particularly to developing countries. It's different, but it's familiar, especially as a Catholic, because I could go to Mass, and you know, they're praying Mass in the language of Rwanda, which was Kinyarwandan, mm-hmm. and I knew, like a little child, I had a sense of knowing what I was a part of.
Thanks to Megan and David and to all the radio hosts and guests who joined us for a timely review of activities going on in the Archdiocese of Chicago. And thank you for listening to Relevant Radio 950 and 930 AM, your home for great Catholic talk radio throughout the week. I'm Jim Dish for Catholic Chicago Week in Review. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Join us every Saturday morning for Catholic Chicago Week in Review. You can stream our programs live or listen to past programs by visiting our website, archchicago.org, and clicking on Radio TV. And please connect with Catholic Chicago on social media.